On this episode of Baseball Barbacast, we do our best to not misspeak. Team USA losing in dramatic fashion to Team Italy. A lot of controversy around comments from manager Mark DeRosa, knowing or not knowing the stakes. Who knew? I don't know. Did he know? We'll also preview DR Venezuela, that game taking place later today. And then a little bit of chatter about Hunter Green and Jesus Luzardo on the way out the door. It is Baseball Barbacast. Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbacast, the only baseball podcast in the world 100% sure that its ticket has been punched to the WBC quarterfinals. I'm Jake Mintz. That's Jordan Schusterman. And I'm going to be there at Lone Depot this weekend, no matter how the run quotient plays out.
Oh, my goodness, my friend. We had a feeling that Mark DeRosa was going to be a main character of this tournament, but not like this, Jake Mintz, not like not this. And that like is this. Our opener.
One of the biggest upsets in World Baseball Classic history, Italy 8, USA 6. But this game and the conversation swirling around it was about a whole lot more than the final score. There are a million directions to go. We will talk about Mark DeRosa's misspeaking, miscalculating. We will, however, begin by giving Italy their well-earned due.
Yeah, and it is kind of a shame that we can't just talk about how awesome of a baseball game this is, because it was an awesome baseball game. And, you know, Italy jumps out to an early lead. We got Nolan McLean in the bump for Team USA. Michael Lorenzen, and I'll start right there. When we previewed this pool, I said, you know what? I actually don't love Michael Lorenzen on the bump against Team USA, because all these guys have faced Michael Lorenzen. I feel like they're might be an advantage to have to, you know, to throw someone out there a little bit more novel that these guys hadn't seen before. And yet, what I did not give Michael Lorenzen enough credit for, and I mean, I had this thought, but again, I was just downplaying his where he's at in his career and how good of a pitcher he is, which is that Michael Lorenzen was not going to be scared, because Michael Lorenzen has been in the major leagues for a long time. And so he had a game plan and he went out and executed it. And he only allows 2 hits, no runs, 1 walk, 2 strikeouts, pitches almost 5 complete innings. But Italy gets on the board early with a homer from Kyle Teal and another home run from Sam Antonacci. As we've mentioned, as we've talked about Italy, both going into the tournament and, you know, so far, this lineup is basically Vinny Pasquantino and a bunch of young guys who are talented and exciting, but haven't really proven themselves yet in the major league. Some of them we've seen in the majors, like Cags and Jacob Marcy. And yes, we do have a veteran at the top, like John Birdie. Yeah, Canzone, who's had some success in the majors. But the Kyle Teals and Sam Antonacci, who's yet to make his debut, and Dante Nori, who's like still in A-ball, like, these are not players. These are talented players. These are prospects. These are players that will likely be major leaguers. But these are not established guys. And the fact that these guys, these younger guys at the bottom of the lineup, have been doing the damage, while Vinny, I believe, still does not have a hit in this tournament. And the top of the order in this game goes 0 for 22. The top 5 hitters in this lineup. And it does not matter, because they get the home runs when they need them. As I mentioned, Teal, they get Antonacci. And then Jack Caglione delivers the big blow that puts Italy up 8-0 in the top of the 6th inning. And at this point is when we start to have the understanding of, like, oh, hold on a second. If USA loses, they're not advancing. And we'll get to DeRosa and everything. But as we're all figuring that out, USA is like, hold on a second. We're still Team USA. Like, we can score runs against the Team Italy bullpen. And that is starts to what happens.
And even as Italy is building this lead, The energy of watching this game was so interesting, because it did feel like they just needed to pop a balloon. Like, there was like a dam of tension. And once the lineup got rolling, there was just too much quality for them to get shut out. Right. That seemed somewhat impossible. And so then USA starts tacking on. We get a homer from PCA. We get a homer from Gunnar Henderson. And runs start to tally on the board. And then we enter the ninth inning with the score 8-5. PCA adds a solo shot to trim the lead down to 8-6. Get a base runner with one out for Bryce Harper and then Aaron Judge. Or no, that's
well,
not right. It
I
wasn't
think,
Bryce.
Yeah.
It was Gunner.
Well, I was going to say.
It was Gunner in the two hole.
You skip past. We got to go back to the eighth. Because in the eighth inning, Matt Festa.
That was Bryce. That,
starts
that
the
was
end.
Bryce.
This is when stuff really starts getting interesting. Because PCA's first homer cuts the... So Gunner gets them on the board with the first home run in the sixth inning. Now it's 8-1. PCA's homer gets them on the board in the seventh. Now it's 8-4. In the bottom of the eighth, Matt Festa comes in and gets the first two outs. So two outs right away.
Yeah. I just want to say, I'm sorry, I misspoke. Just now.
You misread the game log.
I misspoke. That's all. Sorry, keep going.
Two outs. Matt Festa gets two outs. And at this point, it's 8-4. And Italy is four outs away with nobody on base from beating Team USA rather comfortably. Instead, we get a Schwarber single. We get a Will Smith single. We get a Roman Anthony single, who betrayed Team Italy despite Vinny Pasquantino's recruiting efforts. He said, no, I will play for Team USA. I will not play for Team Italy. Looking kind of foolish now, Roman Anthony. And then, with runners on first and third, here comes Bryce Harper. And Bryce Harper did not start this game. Because Bryce Harper, I guess, I'm not really sure why Bryce Harper didn't start this game. We'll talk about Mark DeRosa's managerial decisions in a little bit. But Paul Goldschmidt got the start at first base. So here comes Bryce Harper, the natural candidate to pinch hit against a new pitcher, Ron Marinaccio, who's coming in. And this is the spot. This is what Bryce wants. I know he said it's not that big of a deal because it's not the Olympics, but this is a pretty big deal.
This is
a pretty big spot.
This is not the spot he wants. He wants this in the Olympics. He wants to be playing, Belarus in LA in 2028 while there's, track and field going on next door and archery down the block. That's what Bryce wants. He doesn't want this. And that was the problem. No. And perhaps that is why he flew out to end the inning.
It was, I will say, heck of an at-bat from both pitcher and hitter here. But the execution on this changeup, Harper pops out to center as the last out of the eighth and as, the tying run. And it's like, man, okay. But because you're Team USA and your lineup is your lineup, you got other good players that are going to come up still. And so it's not like, all right, well, they're toast because now they're within three. And if they can just turn the lineup over, we can get back to some of the best players in the world, right? Mason Miller comes out, goes 1-2-3 in the top of the ninth. Bryce Terang leads off the ninth, grounds out, and then PCA goes yard again. Now, the weird thing about the start of this inning is that we assumed that Greg Weissert, essentially now the Italian closer and a very good reliever for the Boston Red Sox, it made all the sense in the world that he would come in.
Hashtag on his mom's side. Hashtag on his mom's side, okay? You got Marinaccio and Caglione and Pasquantino on this team. And then you got the hashtag on his mom's side. Sorry, continue. Greg Weissert his mom's side.
Well described. But Greg Weissert is very good. And it was like, okay, well, he should just clearly come in for the ninth, right? Maybe he's not going to have a four-out save, but he comes in for the ninth. But he doesn't. Marinaccio comes back out. It's like, oh my God, Marinaccio, four-out save? Like, what is going on here? Maybe the plan was to always go to Weissert for the top of the order. Either way, PCA goes yard again. Now it's 8-6 Italy. Now Weissert comes in with two more outs to get. And Bobby Witt hits the single because Bobby Witt is really good at baseball. And now here we are. Here comes Gunnar Henderson and Aaron Judge. And it doesn't matter because Greg Weissert locks it down with two of the gnarliest changeups you will see. Weissert really known more for his sweeper in terms of the pitch that it's like when you watch Greg Weissert, it's like, oh man, look at that pitch move. Again, the pitch execution here was spectacular. And you need someone like Greg Weissert, who is a good major league reliever, who has pitched in high leverage against some of the best hitters in the world, including Aaron Judge, to come out there and not pee his pants and absolutely slam the door on one of the greatest victories in, obviously, Italian baseball history, and to send all of us into a state of chaos that we will, of course, get into. But the baseball game itself was truly outstanding. And Italy's efforts across the board, despite their 0-22 atop the order, was remarkable. There was some great defense. They made the pitches they need to make. They hit the homers when they needed them. And man, oh man, what a win for Team Italy. And Francisco Cervelli, tip of the cap to a manager who, despite that strange Weissert decision, seems to know what he's doing mostly, and is certainly an interesting contrast to Mr. DeRosa, who we will now reintroduce as a main character.
For the world, for the baseballing world, to get on this stage, the wonderful delight that is Vinny Pasquantino in all of its forms and its full multicolored beauty. Vinny is one of one. He is a gem. And it is just so funny that Italy pulled this off with him being absolute ass at the plate.
At the plate, but we have to give him some credit for his defense, which Vinny, in his very funny post-game interview with the MLB social group, they asked him about doing the splits and having some pretty impressive stretches. And Vinny was like, yeah, you know, Royals fans, they know about that, but that's on regional TV. So this is the first time that people have seen him do that on national TV.
Did you see very, what he very said self-aware. As he was walking down the tunnel to the clubhouse mm-hmm. after the game? There's a clip of Vinny screaming, "Where's the effing wine?" Just, he understands the assignment. He gets the bit, and he is having a good time, which is not something that you could say about Team USA. I think what I'd like to do here is handicap and highlight the situation for tonight for this Mexico-Italy game. Take a break, come back, and laugh and explain what is going on with Mark DeRosa. Does that jive with you?
Yes. So because Team USA lost this game, they are not guaranteed a spot in the quarterfinals. They have not punched their ticket to Miami. What is going to happen tonight? Mexico and Italy will face off at Daikin Park. Because the tiebreaker rules involve essentially runs allowed, what happens in this game, not just the results of this game, but particularly the score of this game, is very important. If Italy wins again, Team USA is fine. Because in that scenario, Italy finishes the pool undefeated. They win Pool B. Oh my goodness. Cheers to them. And then USA and Mexico would have the same record at 3-1, at which point, or no, then Mexico just is 2-2, and then they're just out.
Mexico's 2-2.
So it doesn't even matter.
They're done.
So if Italy wins, then USA is 3-1. They advance as the runner-up. However, if Mexico wins, and they score 4 runs or fewer, that means that Team USA is eliminated on a tiebreaker. Because if Mexico wins the game, all 3 of these teams will be 3-1. And because the tiebreaker is essentially runs allowed, I believe divided by defensive outs recorded, Team USA, because they gave up all these runs to Italy, in addition to giving up all the even a few runs, if Mexico and Italy can play a low-scoring game that keeps both teams' runs allowed totals low enough, that means that USA will have the worst number in that mark and thus not advance on the tiebreaker and thus not make it out of pool play and thus not even make it halfway to their stated goal of we got 7 games to win. Well, folks, if they don't advance here, we're going to have some tough conversations about a lot of things involved, even acknowledging the small sample of chaos that this tournament presents. There is so much going on here. But chaos, those are the stakes.
Yeah, I want to hop in on that. And also on the broadcast, they keep bringing up like, oh, well, you know, it's a small sample. You don't want to overreact to too much in a couple games. That's the tournament. That's the exercise. This is our baseball brains, and I, like, we're guilty of this too. Is like, we're just used to the 162 game sample. We're used to a 7-game, 5-game series where more often than not, the quality wins out. But that is not this. That is not what we're doing here. We're doing a different thing. This is a different song, and it is a different dance. And now soccer people are more used to this in the World Cup cycle where, like, you know, you just have a couple bad days and then your manager gets fired and you have to deal with 4 years of discourse. Well, guess what? This is what we're signing up for. If you want this tournament to have real sauce, and boy, does it ever have real sauce this morning, then the small sample size is just part of the equation. And that's what makes it great, because one of my least favorite things about baseball is that, like, over the, like, small sample size eventually moves back to equilibrium and we just, like, have fewer extremes in a statistical, say, you know, like, in the numbers. That's not the case here. Like, whoever wins the MVP of this tournament might hit like 550, right? And that's hilarious. And that's great. And that's interesting. And so I enjoy the lack of sample size going on in the WBC.
If you are a Team USA fan, let's just lay this out very simple. You are watching this Italy-Mexico game tonight. You are rooting for two very simple things: for Mexico to score 5 runs or for Italy to win. If this game is low scoring all the way to the end, you better hope Italy's on top. Because the fact that Team USA is going to have to watch this, I don't know if they were already planning on flying to Miami.
They should have some beers.
Or what? Well, we'll get to that. I don't know exactly how sure they were that they were going to advance. I would love if they just go to the game. They should just go to the game. Sit in the stands. Go cheer on
like
Team Italy.
Like a travel ball tournament?
Put on your... Go put on your Kyle Teal jerseys and cheer them on, even though they just embarrassed you the night before. And I think it's also a really interesting spot for Italy and Mexico, because now they're not going to play, you know, Benji Hill, after losing to USA the night before. By the way, Team USA did beat Team Mexico for the first time in a while. And that was something that we thought we were going to talk about on this podcast, being like, oh, look at USA. Good game. Paul Skeens was great. Bobby Witt was great. And, you know, so and so, whatever. Garrett Whitlock, wow, put respect on his name. No, because now there's a situation where I know Benji Hill's like, we would love to play USA again. How much would you love to play USA again? Because if you just go ahead and win this game, you won't even have to. No, won't even be your problem. But also only score 4 runs. Four runs. We will see how this goes. But there's a lot more to this, because the situation itself is concerning enough for the state of USA baseball. However, it is so much more than that. We're going to take a break. When we return, we will try and not misspeak.
Now, you know you can't draft in fantasy Mark DeRosa, but you could draft basically anybody else on Team USA or Team Italy, and fantasy baseball season is almost here. You should do it with us over at Yahoo Sports. Draft with your pals or join a public league on Yahoo Fantasy. Sign up at the Yahoo Fantasy app or at yahoofantasy.com/baseball. It is a great way to get the juices flowing as opening day draws ever closer. And welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. Let's get to the thing that you want to hear us talk about. It was not that Team USA lost last night. As we mentioned earlier, anything can happen in a 9-inning sample. The issue, the problem, the reason that this is going to be bigger than the game is how and why USA lost. A video of USA manager Mark DeRosa began circulating on the internet machine in the middle of this game. DeRosa, who for his day job is a host on MLB Network, he's been there for a long time. We have been on that show in the past. And like every other media person today, I will say, I like talking to D-Ro. I don't know him very well, certainly not as well as some other people, but I like talking to him. He's a fun conversation to have. And I think generally his breakdowns in front of the largest screen in America are good and insightful. But on Hot Stove on Tuesday morning, when discussing Team USA's situation, DeRosa said that he and Team USA had, quote, punched their ticket to the quarterfinals. And as that video began flowing around the web, the connection between that and USA's substandard performance was too impossible to ignore.
I am amused by the phrasing that you use there, and not to, I just think it's funny.
I misspoke.
A video was circulating. Well, right. A video was circulating as if like someone caught Mark DeRosa telling his friend in the hotel, like, yeah, we're clinched. Like, we're chilling tonight. Don't worry about this.
No, TV.
He's on Major League Baseball Network, which he is very familiar with being on.
Home game.
Yes.
Home game for him.
Yes.
I just want to say the quote. Can I just say the quote, like word for word,
please.
Just so I don't, you know.
Please.
Quote, we want to win this game, even though our ticket is punched to the quarterfinals. He then used that, like off of that, mentioned that he was going to be making some managerial changes, that Paul Goldschmidt would be in there for Bryce Harper, that Alex Bregman wouldn't be playing, Gunnar Henderson in at third base, Ernie Clement in at second, no Bryce Turang. And the context there is wild, because then it raises the question, and this is the whole thing, right? Did Mark DeRosa and Team USA know that they were not through to the quarterfinals? And if so, when did they learn that? Did they build the lineup and the pitching plan thinking that they had already gone through?
Yeah, so I actually want to pause it at this part of the question, because this is something where I'm not going to defend them, but I do think that this focusing on the specific lineup construction in this game and even the pitching to a degree, although I think that's a little bit less defensible. Whoever they were going to send out there or not, it's more about whether they knew or not. Because this team is still way better than Team Italy. You can say, oh, but they didn't have Harper in there. Oh, but they didn't have Turang in there. Oh, they
totally
used Ryan
right.
Yarbrough. Like, I don't care, okay? You're Team USA. You have put together the best roster you ever had. And even if, you're only at 80% of your best, whatever. Whether you were doing that on purpose because you thought you were through, whether you were doing that on purpose because you thought you could beat Italy that way, I don't care. And that's what goes back to the game recap which we gave, which is also gets to what Mark DeRosa said after the game, in addition to his trying to clarify, which he didn't really clarify, which is that he kept saying we had the right guys up in the right spots. Aaron Judge, Bryce Harper, opposite tying runs. They didn't come through. Ryan Yarbrough is a good major league pitcher. Is he the best option in that spot to stay in and allow a home run to Jack Caglione? Probably not. You can give DeRosa some crap about that. The fact that Clayton Kershaw was warming up, which DeRosa admits later on, was essentially because they had no pitchers left. And guess what? That's important, because every run you allow in a tiebreaker scenario is incredibly important. I know this didn't matter, but if Clayton Kershaw had come in and allowed a run or two or three or four, this game tonight would be even more treacherous because of what the tiebreaker situation would be. And so,
and the whole thing would be even more embarrassing. They dodged a bullet with the Kershaw thing. Like, we were a little iffy about him being on the roster. It has been celebrated as what an honor, but this career achievement award almost came back to bite Team USA in the ass. Hey, why was Kershaw warming? He was the only guy we had left. Well, maybe you should have added, I don't know, someone on a big league roster to do that job. Make Kershaw the pitching coach. Who cares?
And so before we go back to whether they knew or not, how DeRosa's communicated, what he said after the game, because that is certainly a focus here, I do want to take the time here to also just talk about this premise that continues to come up, also going back to the broadcast, of, well, you know, he's handcuffed. What can he do? He has to use these pitchers in these scenarios. By the way, he's not the only manager dealing with this in this tournament, as we know. But let's fine. Let's just grant it to him. Oh, well, sorry. You know, I can't use this guy in back-to-back days. I can't just... Well,
Lorenzen,
one, my first point, which is that
wasn't supposed to pitch last night, dude. Did you see this in Jeff Passan's story at ESPN? Basically, Italy's preferred plan was to have Lorenzen piggyback off Aaron Nola against Mexico. And they were going to basically put their two best pitchers in the same game. And the Colorado Rockies, of all people who employ Michael Lorenzen, were like, we don't want him to throw on that day because it messes up the timetable. Francisco Cervelli was dealing with a similar thing as well. Now, that ended up pushing Lorenzen into the spot and he performed well. I understand that. But to pretend like Team USA is the only one dealing with these limitations is preposterous.
It's that. And then it's also just the way that you've heard this happened in some of the earlier broadcasts, and this like really bothered me. But it's really only come up with Team USA where you're just hearing, even when in the games that they've been winning, it's like, well, you know, these guys are still trying to work on stuff. Oh, Michael Walker's trying to get his changeup ready, or he's trying to get his slider ready. And so we got to do it's like, listen, if you're here, I know that there are restrictions and there's pitch limits within the WBC rules and probably within the restrictions. But once you're in the game and once you're signing up for this, it's not spring training. It's not. And honestly, it's insulting to the people who did. And I, by the way, I think that it's insulting to literally like the Aaron Judges and the Bobby Witts and even the Tarek Skubals of the world who did go out of their way to participate in this tournament and talk it up as if it is an important thing that they need to win. And then to have all this messaging around it throughout the game, whether they're winning or losing, and just being like, well, you know, spring training, got to get ready for the season. It's like, One or the other.
And that,
you don't have to do this. If
that messaging isn't happening on the broadcast, if it's not something that is being brought up in off-the-record conversations between the broadcasters and the staff. Like, if that was not a priority on the staff, it wouldn't have entered John Smoltz's mind on the broadcast, and we wouldn't be hearing about it. That's just how this works. Like, they meet with the manager every day, and they're, like, asking about different guys, and, like, you could envision the rest of being like, oh, yeah, you know, we want to make sure we get him some work. It's like, if you want to make sure that, you know, Michael Walker is getting the work he needs, go back to surprise. Okay? Go back to surprise.
That's
to
the
spring
thing.
Training. That's like, I don't know what to
it's not. We acknowledge that you are all working within some of these strange limitations and rules and regulations, and the MLB teams have influence. That's fine. Once we get there, it should be about trying to win the game and whatever that looks like. And the way that Team USA particularly has talked about the lineup and getting guys off their feet and whatever. And that's why, again, whether or not they were doing this or not, I think even if they 100% knew, oh, we need to win this game, I think this very well might have been the lineup they put out there, which, by the way, I think is fine because, as I just said, they're way better than every other team, even if you just look at the top few hitters. So sure, it's not as good as if you had, you know, also Terang in there over Ernie or whatever, Cal over Will Smith, whatever you want to do. It doesn't matter. You're focusing, you're zooming in way too far on the line of construction there, where no, it's not about that.
Yes.
It's about, I think the Kershaw point is really, really important when you're saying, well, we had no one else. Well, that was a really important part of the game, all things considered, and you were going to go to someone that is retired.
It's like the hot dog man meme. We're trying to find out the guy who built this roster. Like, you guys had an issue last time around with not having enough pitching depth because of these restrictions. You knew that they were going to exist. And look, like, this is so cool for Clayton Kershaw. I understand that. But it's like, are you trying to win the tournament? Or are you trying to make, you know, viral clips? Are you trying to lift the trophy? Or are you trying to get work in? I think Team USA's priorities across the board are like stretched in a bunch of different directions. And now some of that, as I talked about on the last podcast, is just like part of being the favorite. I like that's built in to an extent, but they have lost. This operation has certainly lost the benefit of the doubt in that regard.
Oh, yeah.
And it's not like this is new to DeRosa. Remember, he managed the team in 2023. And I think now is a good time to fold in his comments after the game where, you know, he goes on MLB Network in the morning and he says that their ticket is punched. Asked about it after the fact, he says, quote, yeah, I misspoke. I was on Hot Stove with a couple buddies today and completely misread the calculations. Let me stop there. Those are different things. He is misspeaking here again, which is kind of funny. And look, I've probably jumbled on my words in like 50 million times on this podcast, including just now. Like, it happens. I'm not blaming DeRosa for that. we knew Mexico was going to play Italy, running all the numbers. If we lost tonight with the runs allowed and runs scored and outs, so I just misspoke. That does not answer the question. It was a failure on some of our, you know, colleagues to not follow up on this. We, like, in the press conference, someone needed to be like, hey, Mark, did you know that you were through before the game? And if not, when did you find out? Like, that is the biggest story here. And, like, it's easy for me to say from a, you know, Courtyard Marriott in Fort Lauderdale, I wasn't there. These things are clearer and easier to handle when you're not in the thick of it. I've been there. I'm sympathetic to it, right? But, like, that was a mistake, and I think was something of a disservice. And DeRosa deserves some of the blame, too, for not clarifying that. And then you have DeRosa before the game telling in the press conference that the Team USA guys were having beers the night before, celebrating after they beat Mexico. That's not a problem. Like, having some beers and being up late is not the reason that these guys lost yesterday. But, like, the willingness to share that and, like, admit that it was, like, an overtly celebratory atmosphere that they had already kind of moved on just folds into the idea of superiority complex, of assuming that you were going to win, of feeling confident enough to say punch your ticket. Like, you know who's not misspeaking and saying punch your ticket? 19 other managers in the WBC. And so there's just that lack of attention to detail that just helps to maybe explain how we got to this point.
That is exactly where I was going to go, which is just the air of hubris and confidence that comes in part with the favorite, comes in part with the media crowning them before the tournament starts. I get it. You look at this roster, you say, this is it. This is a team that should win, that can win, that we think probably will win. So, you know, how much are we complicit in that? But again, especially just everything surrounding, it's like, well, this is the team. We are not going to let this happen again. We've assembled this roster, has no holes. There's no problems. You can't beat us. And you're exactly right. It comes through in the communication. It comes through in whether or not you knew you were through or not, saying like, we're going to get some guys off their feet. You know, we respect Italy, but it's fine. It's an important game. But, you know, we want to get Goldschmidt in there. We want to do this. We want to, you know, and then during the game, just going to get some length out of Ryan Yarbrough. It's like, okay, I understand you're working within these constraints and he wants to get his pitch count and you have these, and you only have so many pitchers. Okay, that's all fine. But then you cannot talk as if you have this thing wrapped up. Whether you actually think you do or not, the tone of the way that you have talked about this team had just, you've just gone straight to, you have mentally gone to Miami as soon as you beat Mexico. That is obviously very embarrassing and very problematic.
They probably had to change the schedule for the charter flight, right? Because assuming that they win last night, they're 4-0, they're flying to Miami today on Wednesday. Like, absolutely.
Yes.
Right? They're not staying in Houston another day. They're getting to Miami. And now they have to wait until the result of this game that starts at 7 o'clock Eastern tonight. And oh my God, the travel secretary for Team USA picking up the phone. Hey, we're going to need to push the flight back.
The last thing that we should mention about this DeRosa situation, again, I joked earlier, the video circulating. It does appear that clip of Mark DeRosa on Hot Stove, which is obviously whenever anybody goes on Hot Stove, you can find that clip on MLB.com and they post on Facebook and they post on Twitter and whatever. It appears that they have taken that clip off of the internet and perhaps even edited a version of it that appears on Facebook. This is some reporting on The Athletic. I saw a couple other people on Twitter notice this, that this link to where you can watch Mark DeRosa talk about beating Team Mexico is not a link that is now live. That is so embarrassing it's not like Mark DeRosa told them to take that down, right?
Yeah, that's
that is an editorial decision that I honestly cannot even fathom. Like, that is just so, it's so much worse than just like, because you're doing damage control for like essentially a league employee, right? But it's just, it's such a bad look. It's such a bad look.
And
it's
he doesn't want that.
That's the whole
DeRosa
point.
DeRosa doesn't want it to
of
get.
Of course not.
Brother, it's 2026. Okay?
It's
you like, removing the video from your internal feed, which, by the way, of all the people that watched Mark DeRosa say this, do you know how many of them watched it on MLB.com/Mark DeRosa's talks on MLB Hot Stove? Like 1%.
Like,
less than
1%. Now.
Like, oh, no one saw it. We're good. It is just, again, what year do you think it is? It is just an unbelievable unforced error. That
what is this?
It's so bad, dude. And this is the type of thing MLB feels like would have done like 10 years ago. It's just such an unforced error.
Oh my
it's
gosh,
so
100%. So I don't.
And it like, okay, so they're just, let me take a pause here. Like, there are all these behind the scenes kind of like rumor conspiracy theory takes about like, oh, DeRosa's just the manager because he does stuff with MLB on labor, whatever, and they want him to be around all the big leaguers, or like DeRosa is an MLB employee, so he gets more leash. Like, and I don't know if I believe all of those things. Like, I don't, in fact, I don't think, like, there's maybe an aspect of truth in that. But when you go and you delete this video, you are putting fuel on the fire, brother. Like, you want to help build a conspiracy theory? Delete a video that people have already watched millions of times. Like, that is not building trust with the public. Okay?
And yes, 100%. And that is the last point here before we take a break and come back and preview another extremely compelling baseball game that is happening tonight. Two, really. Shouts out Canada and Cuba. Is just back to Mark DeRosa as the main character. Why he's the manager or not, I know you just mentioned, okay, what are the reasons? Whatever. It's also part of why, when you think about, okay, how seriously is Team USA taking this? This is part of why, as you mentioned, we are being pushed in a lot of different directions. Because you have this many players participating and saying how important it is, and Aaron Judge being like, man, I watched us lose last time and I said never again. And, you know, all these saying, oh, I'm so proud and all these things. And then you also have just a lot of the stuff around it, and just how, whether it's being managed, whether it's being talked about, that makes it feel like this is not as important to you, or you are not taking it as seriously. And unfortunately, I think Mark DeRosa has become the face of that, which sucks, because as you mentioned, this is not a bad dude or not a smart person, but maybe just not someone who is in the best position to succeed. And he has not exactly done himself any favors, which, again, the real tragedy of the misspeaking is that he's speaking on TV literally every day. So you would hope that of all the people to put in that job and speak on behalf of your team, that he would be someone in better position to do that.
I really don't want to keep like crapping on DeRosa, as funny as it is, but like Francisco Cervelli, Team Italy's manager, moved to Italy for half the year and was driving around the country in a van to drum up support for Italian baseball. He has been managing games. He's been in the dugout. He's been building this roster. He's been living, breathing, and eating this thing for years. Now, I understand that whoever the Team USA manager is going to be has probably another job. It is not a full-time job like it is in international soccer. But, like, shouldn't the manager be a manager? Like, someone who manages, like, regularly? And that's not to say that DeRosa's not qualified to be a big league manager one day. Like, I think he very well could be. But the fact of the matter is he's coming into this situation having not worn baseball pants and held the proverbial clipboard since the last WBC, you know? And it's like, it's difficult to swallow that and to square that with the result that we saw. Last thing. Team USA, still the favorite to win the tournament?
I can't say that now. Because they have not punched their ticket. And by the way,
they
even
could
if they get all the way there,
they'll easily win.
You know?
They could still easily win, dude.
No,
like that is like if they're not the number one favorite, they're two or three, even still. Like, even still. This lineup, this roster is so freaking talented.
I agree.
Are the vibes a disaster fest right now? Yes. The energy is wackety whack. Yes, the names and the talent on this roster are enough to overcome that and win like the most soulless WBC title of all time. That is in play. That is very much in play. We will talk about that on Friday to see once they punch their ticket or not.
Yes, we will. All right. We're going to take a break. When we return, DR versus Venezuela. And a few other notes before we say goodbye. Welcome back to Baseball Barbercast. It is now time to talk about the pool play game that we thought we would be leading with. This is a game that has been circled on our calendars for essentially since literally the day the WBC schedule was announced, with the final game of pool play on Wednesday night, Dominican Republic versus Venezuela. Both teams 3-0. I like to think that this is exactly how they set it up, where they were like, you know, it'd be really cool if both these teams were 3-0 going into this last game. But it is not just that these teams are trying to, you know, prove like, hey, we are the, you know, Latin American baseball powerhouse. There are real stakes here. It is not just, both of these teams have indeed punched their ticket to the quarterfinals. So this is not an elimination game for these teams. However, it is one with serious stakes. And that is because the winner of this game will face Korea on Friday, the runner-up in Pool C, whereas the loser, who will be the runner-up in Pool D, will face the winner of Pool C. And who is that? Oh, a little team called Samurai Japan, who by all accounts is expected to send a right-handed gentleman named Yoshinobu Yamamoto to the Hill on Saturday night in Miami, 9 p.m. local start for that game. So this game is humongously important for either of these teams' chances of going all the way. Now, could either of these teams just beat Japan? Yes, absolutely, because they have a lot of really good baseball players. And Japan has certainly not looked invincible. However, Japan, DR, Venezuela, all still undefeated, unlike Team USA. And so this game is going to be an interest, especially if, you know, Italy, Mexico goes the way that it could and USA is out. Now we're talking about these teams as the ones potentially in best position to win this whole thing. And this game in particular is a very fun matchup when you consider the context of what happened 3 years ago, which was when it was the first game of pool play. And Venezuela won that game 5-1, which immediately got DR off on the wrong foot. They ended up losing to Puerto Rico as well. DR does not even advance out of pool play. Venezuela goes on to lose a heartbreaker in the quarterfinals against Team USA, as we know. But the fun element of this rematch is the fact that it will include one of the same starting pitchers. Sandy Alcantara, in his home ballpark, will be taking the ball for DR against Venezuela. Eduardo Rodriguez on the bump for Venezuela. And Sandy in that game in 2023 went 3 2/3, 5 hits, 3 runs, 3 walks, 2 strikeouts, allowed a home run to Anthony Santander. He will not have to worry about Anthony Santander in this game, but
No one will have to worry about
except, I guess, the Blue Jays.
Except for the Blue Jays.
Yeah. Blue Jays are not, they're very worried about Anthony Santander, but Sandy has a chance at redemption here. As we know, again, the rules dictate he can only throw 65 pitches or a little bit more than that, depending on where he's at in the outing. But this is a big opportunity for Sandy Alcantara, a big opportunity for both of these teams. And the star power here is spectacular. These teams had a lot of good players last time, and now it is even more so because, as we know, Team DR is even better than last time. And I think you could argue, maybe not on the pitching side, but the lineup for Venezuela, I think, is a good case of being even better than it was last time.
Especially if Luis Arraez does home runs now, or does home runs only in the WBC. So I will be at this game tonight. I'm currently in South Florida, and this will be my first ever WBC experience. I'm unbelievably excited. And I think the context around this game is making me even more excited that both of these teams are indeed through. Sure, you don't want to play Japan and Yamamoto. Sure, you prefer to play Korea. I get all that. But I think tonight is really going to just be like a celebration of baseball. There will be tension. Yes, there will be stakes. Yes, the energy is going to be phenomenal. But I am excited about where this game is within the context of the pool. Like, it'll be a slightly different experience because, like, the worst case scenario for both teams is getting through, is having their ticket already punched. And I can't remember being this excited to go to a baseball game in quite a long time. You know, maybe Game 7 of the World Series last year, but this is definitely up there.
That wasn't that long ago. And of course, Yamamoto.
Yeah.
We saw him in that game, as well as the game before. You remember that? A lot of Yamamoto. A lot of Yamamoto in our lives, and I'm not complaining. But E-Rod against Sandy Alcantara. I will say the thing. Now, listen, the lineups, you know, we could do a full preview. Honestly, we'll save that for when these teams advance, really digging in on kind of what these lineups look like. You know, there's a couple of questions for Venezuela, mostly Jackson Churio, who missed the first two games because he was, I believe, hit by a pitch in one of the exhibition games. But he did start in center field in their third game against Netherlands and batted second. Otherwise, we saw Michael Garcia batting second with Acuna at the top, Arise batting third, which I don't think is suddenly going to change now. I think what's more interesting is where Arise is playing defensively. We've seen him a little bit at second, a little bit at first, how they mix in the Contreras brothers. Sal Perez, I expect, will be playing behind the plate. Gino Suarez, is he in the lineup? Do we see, you know, is Michael in the lineup also with the Gino, et cetera, et cetera. But obviously the DR lineup has been the star of pretty much the entire tournament. I know they haven't faced the greatest competition, but they have dominated. Since they were down 3-2 through two innings against their opening game against Nicaragua, the DR has outscored their opponents 32-2 with nine home runs. So you could say, oh, well, who are they facing? Yeah, bad teams. But guess what? As we've seen, there are other good teams facing bad teams, and it hasn't looked this overwhelming. This lineup has lived up to the hype in every sense. Cameron Arrow has been amazing. Juan Soto has been amazing. Tatis had his moment the other day. Julio's batting, you know, sixth or seventh. And even Austin Wells is getting in on the party, even if he's not celebrating like the rest of his friends. So this team's amazing. And I will say, too, you got to give credit to the DR pitching so far, man. Like I said, have not faced the best competition. But those relievers have generally come in and thrown strikes, which was really my concern. And I think is going to be really important in this game, too, now that they're facing much higher you know, quality of opponent.
Oh, I'm so excited. Oh, my God.
Yeah, this is going to be great. Okay, enough about this. The one other thing we have to mention, and then we'll quickly hit a few more pieces of news, is WBC
remember
related.
Pool A?
Is that there is one more pool. Pool A, remember Pool A? Listen,
it's the first.
It's had some moments.
It's the A.
It's had some moments.
A pool.
It's had some rain delays, which has not helped. However, this pool
it's
also
dyed
is coming down
blonde
to the final
hair.
Day. It does. It does indeed. Cuba versus Canada.
Did you dye your hair blonde,
to advance
Jordan?
This afternoon.
Is that why your hair is
for Team Puerto
that
Rico?
Color? Because you're for Team Puerto Rico?
It's never been that light. That's for sure. Okay, Canada versus Cuba. Winner advances. Levon Moinella, one of the best pitchers in the world that is not in Major League Baseball. The lefty who's been dominating in Japan for the last few years. He will be on the mound for Cuba. Cal Quantrill taking the ball for Canada. What's interesting about this is that it's not just that they're playing to advance because of the way that the rest of the pool is shaking out. They're also playing for the top or runner-up. If Cuba wins, they will be the runner-up because they lost to Puerto Rico. So Puerto Rico would win the pool. However, if Canada wins because they beat Puerto Rico last night, that means that Canada will win the pool. And Puerto Rico will win.
And they get to play Team USA.
Well, what is most interesting about that is no matter what, once this game concludes, because this is in the afternoon, neither team, whoever advances, will have any idea who they're playing because it will be entirely dependent on who advances. And I honestly am not even sure how the seeding is going to work based on the mess that we are about to witness between Italy and Mexico and USA watching. But the point is that these teams are playing for advancing, but they aren't going to know who they're playing until much later because that is the chaos that we have. We have now made it to the final day, and we do not know literally any of the quarterfinal matchups yet.
It's great.
That is really something.
A quick thought on Levon Moinella. You mentioned he is almost undeniably the best pitcher on the planet not currently employed by a Major League Baseball team. He is from Cuba. He, instead of going stateside when defecting, he didn't even technically defect. A number of Cuban players go over to Japan to play in NPB. I heard an amazing story from a scout yesterday that I'd like to share. This scout works for a big league team, went over to Japan in 2024 to go look at Roki. Or excuse me, 2024, to go look at Roki. You know, goes over, looks at Roki, and it's like Roki against Moinello. Or it was like a doubleheader and Moinello is pitching in the morning, Roki and I, whatever. And he's sitting there after seeing Roki and he's watching Moinello and he like turns to his boss and he's like, forget Sasaki. Who is this guy? He could be in a, he could be a number three in a big league rotation right now. And the guy's boss had to be like, yeah, so he's not coming over, you know, Cuban government. He's staying in Japan. The upshot here is that Levi Moinello, he would be what? I mean, maybe this is preposterous. He would be the fifth best starter on Team USA's team, maybe four. He's really good. This is not like a guy who's like, you know, knows how to work the edges and has a lot of pitches and he's got experience on the international stage. Like, no, he's throwing in the mid-90s with like legit stuff. And so kind of a bummer for Canada that they have to face it because of the way Cuba's schedule played out, like they get to throw Moinello twice. He threw the opener and now he's enough rest to pitch twice in pool play, which is kind of wild. So we will see how this goes. But like, yeah, Moinello is not, this is not like Manny Barreda who started against Team USA for Mexico, who was just like hoping and praying that he would get some lineouts. Like, this is a dog.
Moinello and then their closer, Raidel Martinez, very similar.
Similar.
Also been one of the best pitchers in Japan. Also not really expected to come over because he's making a ton of money in Japan and kind of has an arrangement there. How many innings that those two can cover within their pitch counts is probably going to determine how this game goes. But like I said, big stakes, but they don't even really know. Fortunately, there's not some shenanigans. They're not going to try and like, it's not a situation where it's like, oh, I can avoid Team USA by maybe winning or only doing this. Like, no, they need to win. And so this game should also be very compelling. And that will be in the afternoon. All right, Jake, before we say goodbye, two bits of news that we wanted to hit. One is bad and one is good. We will begin with the good. And that is that Jesus Luzardo is a whole lot wealthier. Congratulations to the left-hander who turns 29 in September. This dude is one of the best left-handed pitchers in the world, and the Philadelphia Phillies just paid him as such as they signed him to a five-year, $135 million extension that begins next year.
So he'll make he's actually not a whole lot wealthier. You said he's a whole lot wealthier. Oh, that's true. Not yet.
Not yet. Just $11 million in ARB this year, and then $27 a year through 2031. This reminds me a little bit of the Tyler Glasnow extension, just because there's not really a doubt that Jesus Luzardo is really good, but he hasn't pitched that much. And so the difference here is, of course, the Dodgers signed Glasnow to an extension before he even threw a pitch for them. The Phillies got kind of the trial run, and the trial run was awesome because he just threw a career-high 183 innings.
Amazing.
Seventh in the NL Cy Young, peripherals were outstanding, and he's just really, really, really good. And so I think the Phillies are kind of looking at their rotation, which they've already invested heavily in, and are just like, all right, these are our pitchers. Andrew Painter, hopefully you can come on down and be a cheap, good pitcher for us while we are paying literally everybody else a ton of money. I know Christopher Sanchez is on a very team-friendly contract, but we know Wheeler's making a ton.
The
we
most,
know Noel's making a
the
ton.
Most. He is on the most team-friendly contract in baseball. Sorry, go ahead.
He I think he does have a very strong case that is the case now. So, he's good for Luzardo, man. I think he was certainly primed to be one of the top available free agent starters next offseason. But I can totally understand because he has dealt with, I mean, again, it has not been the cleanest track record of health.
No.
But the Phillies have done about as well as any team in baseball keeping their guys on the field. I know the Wheeler one has been a bit of more of a fluke injury situation. So,
same with Noel last year, got hit on the foot.
Yep.
By a comebacker.
Yeah, not an arm trouble, but a lot of their guys stay on the mound, and I have to imagine that helps in addition to, you know, being on a good team and clearly a place where he's kind of unlocked another level. So good for him.
Two things here. One is the Phillies last year, I'm sure, thought about Jesus Luzardo and Ranger Suarez as, in their minds, maybe fighting for this contract. it makes sense that they did not try and keep both of these guys around long term. When you look at the numbers, they're pretty similar, right? Didn't Suarez get a deal around the same amount of money?
Yeah, it's a great point.
And so the Phillies are working with a ton of information on both of these guys, right? Yes, Lizardo was only there for 1 year and they only have a year of data and, you know, info from being around him. Ranger Suarez was there for a long time. And I think it is revealing and indicative that the Phillies, with all that information, were like, Lizardo, not a question. We'll pay him that money. And so when you look at the Ranger Suarez decision in retrospect, it doesn't like make him look bad, Suarez. It just, we can now read that as a Lizardo over Suarez decision and not like a, we're going to try and put money back in our pockets. And then the other thing that I would like to point out, before Ryan Kirkering, you know, yeeted the ball against the net, Lizardo came in relief in that game in, I believe, the 11th and the 10th and the 11th, and was like pretty great on only a few days rest. And to do that at that point is like, he's awesome. Like, his stuff is so good. And yeah, they can keep him on the field. He's going to be good for them for a long, long time. The one other bit of news pitching related we should mention is that Hunter Green, the Reds ace, is out for a few months. He had arthroscopic surgery to remove bone spurs and loose bodies. He had both. My brother-in-law got some loose bodies removed this winter, Jordan. And so whenever he talks about the surgery, he just waves his arms around and just goes, loose bodies.
Showing how loose he is.
Yeah, some bone chips and salsa.
I don't think Hunter Green is you know, dancing around his house right now, thrilled about this news. He did put out his own statement kind of on the situation. There's some weird stuff around this because Hunter Green basically revealed that he's been dealing with this for a long time. And he said, like, yeah, I wanted to push through it for the postseason run last year, and that makes sense. But because of the number of times throughout Hunter Green's career, there have kind of been some strange, like, how healthy is he? Is he on the same page with the team? That's been a little bit odd. That said, this just sucks. Fortunately, the Reds have accumulated some other really, really good pitchers, but Hunter Green is still their best arm. And now they will be dipping into pitching depth that they probably wish they could have kind of held on to. Andrew Abbott's really good. Brady Singer is solid. Nick Lodolo is really good. Chase Burns could just blow up and be 20, 30 best pitchers in baseball this year. So that's possible. But now it's pressure on guys like Rhett Lauder, who we did not really pitch at all last year because of injuries. Chase Petty, Brandon Williamson, who have not really succeeded in the major leagues that much, at least not recently in the case of Williamson. So it sucks. It's disappointing. And, you know, they'll spin it and be like, oh, awesome, we'll get him at the trade deadline. Hunter Green, come on down. But when you're a team like the Reds, where you're already probably going to be on the fringes of any sort of postseason race, not having Hunter Green is not a good thing. You might be in a much worse situation by the time he comes back than you would have been otherwise. And that is why it is no bueno. All right, we're done.
Hey, Jordan.
We have some baseball to watch. How about that?
Did you hear
this is that what a freaking day.
USA lost.
Yeah.
USA lost?
I did. I did.
Yeah. Can I make one more point? Let me make one more point.
Oh, please. Please.
We talk about the that can't happen scale quite often. And I can't remember a moment breaking the that can't happen scale off the field in the way that the Team USA messaging and video getting taken down has broken the that can't happen scale over the last 12 hours. Just a masterclass in what cannot happen. That's all.
Well said. We will be back. You will be back. I have some family matters to attend to later this week, but you will be back later this week, and we will see. We'll see if Team USA is still in the tournament or not. I'm flying to Miami on Saturday. We will be covering those last few games in person. Very excited for that. But enjoy DR in Venezuela. Thank you to Andrew Hartz and Ingrid Rosas for producing. You can email us at baseballbarbecast@gmail.com. If there's anything else about this whole DeRosa situation that we missed, please let us know, because I'm sure there's even more angles that I was thinking about that we didn't even get to. But for now, we will end it. Thank you for listening to Baseball Barbecast. We'll talk to you soon.